Cytiva, now with the life sciences business from Paul, is a global provider of technologies, services, and expertise to help researchers and companies protect and preserve the planet for improved human health and safety. With a rich heritage dating back hundreds of years, Cytiva brings a wealth of technical expertise and talent, a broad and deep portfolio, and exceptional service to help researchers and industry labs at every stage from source to shelf. Visit Cytiva.com to learn more.
This is the Master Brewers Podcast, brought to you by the Master Brewers Association of the Americas, a volunteer organization dedicated to continually improving the products and processes of our membership since 1887. Let's go! Master Brewers brings you interviews with the industry's best and brightest in brewing science, technology, and operations.
Calm down, I'm moving too fast.
This episode was made possible by the following sponsors.
Discover more ways to enhance flavor and maximize beer yields with Salvo. Now available in varieties like Sultana, Trident, Lotus, Calypso, Cascade, and many more. Discover how Salvo can help boost your brew at hopsteiner.com.
Berkeley Yeast, creators of diacetyl-free yeast strains. Diacetyl-free strains are bioengineered to produce the ALDC enzyme inside the yeast cell to keep diacetyl low during fermentation and after packaging. Diacetyl-free strains create the cleanest flavor profile possible, which makes them the yeast of choice for the most exacting brewer. Go to berkeleyyeast.com to read about how brewers are using diacetyl-free strains to propel their beers to the top of the podium.
Attention all brewing professionals dedicated to operational excellence. Enhance your brewing processes with Brewmax by ProLite. Our sophisticated brewing management software is designed to optimize production, ensuring the highest quality brews. Unleash the full potential of your brewing operations. Visit our website to learn more. Brewmax, empowering brewing excellence from grain to glass.
I think it's really important that we start integrating sustainability in all aspects of brewing, including quality control.
This week on the show, what is green chemistry and how and why should you apply it in your brewery?
Hey, I'm Dana Garvis with Oregon Brew Lab here in the Willamette Valley in Eugene, Oregon.
Dana, apparently chemistry comes in different colors now. What is green chemistry?
Green chemistry, according to the American Chemical Society, is the design of chemical products and processes that reduce and eliminate the use and generation of hazardous substances. So green chemistry applies across the life cycle of a chemical product, starting from the design of that chemical to the manufacture of it, then the use, and then also looking at when we dispose of that chemical. We look at how we can make it more environmentally friendly.
And what's not part of green chemistry?
So green chemistry is not an all or nothing thing. I never want you to look at your neighbor brewery and say, oh, well, they're not doing everything possible, so it doesn't count. No, you know, any attempt or any implementation is green chemistry. It's also not hard and fast rules that you have to adhere to. So you can tweak it to fit your budget, to fit your region. It's also not a cure-all. You know, if every single brewery right now started to use green chemistry in their quality control laboratory, I hate to tell you, John, but we would not solve the climate crisis. So it's not a cure-all. And it's also in that way, not a measurement of environmentalism. So I don't want you just comparing yourself to your neighbor or to another lab. I want you to look at your own process and try and improve it on your own and do what you can with your constraints. And then lastly, my favorite thing about what green chemistry is not is that it's not limited to chemical processes. I use green chemistry principles in my kitchen, in my office, and I think people can use them in their brewery, in their restaurant, in lots of places throughout their business.
Talk about green chemistry's approach to safety, because that's kind of a big part of it.
Green chemistry is synonymous with safety. All interactions with chemicals require PPE, or personal protective equipment. So that includes, but is not limited to, things like closed-toed shoes, long sleeves, wearing your nitrile or latex gloves, having safety goggles. I think COVID really showed us where in the brewery is a really great safe place to wear a mask, like dealing with malt dust. Hopefully you're wearing a mask for a lot of your chemical experiments as well. And then I also think something that we're going to talk about a lot more in coming future in the industry is earplugs and hearing loss. I think that that's a huge safety thing that we don't cover. And along those lines, I just think that chemistry, green chemistry in itself, the MO is safety, whether that's safety for the personnel, the lab tech, the person in the room next to the lab, the critters outside, the fish, it's the whole planet, safety of everything. So it is synonymous.
Okay, so let's talk about how exactly green chemistry can be applied to beer.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways that it can be applied to beer. What I'd like to focus on the most is in the beer lab, where we have a lot of the most, we have more chemicals and more chemical processes going on. So the six principles that I've sort of dubbed as useful for green or for beer would be waste prevention. So what can we do to prevent any sort of extra reagents that we need to either take to hazardous waste or that we need to dispose of carefully? Atom economy is right in there, making sure that the byproducts we do create are eliminated or minimized. We can select safer solvents really, really easily. I think there's a lot of options out there, and a lot of chemical distribution companies are willing to work with their breweries. So Weber or Five Star is willing to work with you to find a safer solvent or cleaner for your brewery or for your lab. Energy efficiency, you know, looking at maybe your brewery, your brew house is on natural gas. Is that something you want to stay with? You want to move to electric? Can you employ solar? But then also looking at something a little more focused in the lab, looking at selecting instruments that run on just a standard voltage, and looking at things that don't require high pressures or temperatures. And then again, renewable feedstocks, making sure that the energy we are getting in is a renewable option, and accident prevention always. I think maybe we notoriously in this industry could improve on our accident prevention.
All right, so you've got some examples of ASBC methods that many listeners will be familiar with. Should we run through a few of those?
Yeah, let's do it. So I like to start with some of the most basic stuff, and I think that to the seasoned lab tech or the seasoned lab manager in the brewing industry, some of these ideas will be obvious, but I think there's a large amount of people, myself included, who some of these ideas came to later in my career. So the first thing is, you know, one of the most simple things that you can do is when you're degassing with filter paper, you can compost that filter paper afterwards. You can just throw that in the yard waste or in the compost if your brewery has one. I think one of the other things that you can compost, which I find really fascinating, is if you do micromedia with UBA, which is universal beer agar, and you haven't put cyclohexamide in that, which is a yeast inhibitor, you can compost both of those medias after you've used them, and you don't need to sterilize it or anything. Those bacteria will actually help the compost go through faster. And I think also in some states, YPD, yeast peptone dextrose media, can also be composted. It has a little bit of a fertilizer in it that some states, I don't remember which states, sorry, some states don't want in compost. But for the most part, I think YPD is also a media that you can compost. So that's just one thing. Things that you can compost in the brewery you don't think about. If you do malt steeps or hop teas, you can compost all of that material as well. And actually, Hannah over at Montana State Malting Innovation Center sent me a link to a little, I think it's like $500 tabletop composter that you can use, that they use in their lab for malt sensory.
All right, so you start off by talking about degassing with filter paper, but there's other, if you're degassing in other ways, there's other options too, right?
Yeah. So honestly, the most environmentally way to degas your beer is the pouring back to back with two different flasks, because you're not using any paper, right? That's technically a byproduct or waste. You're not using any energy other than human energy. And you're not creating potential accidents, you know. You can also use a benchtop centrifuge to get out that CO2 and to clarify any hazy samples. But again, that's pulling a draw for energy. And you can also use a sonicator to degas your beers. It's funny, though, that sometimes the simplest and most annoying methods are the most environmental.
It's not annoying. It's a good workout. I like it.
Is that how you degas your beers?
I've always done it that way, yeah.
Yeah. How do you 30? Do you count?
Yeah. I have a magic number, but I'm not telling you what it is.
Okay. maybe listeners can guess.
Yeah. So, I've heard a lot of different numbers, but and honestly, it kind of depends on, it kind of depends on how cold the beer is, right? So
it does. It makes a difference, doesn't it?
So you have to kind of go by worst case scenario, I think. Mm-hmm. I found that the number that I was always, I'm trying to think of what they taught us in school, but whatever it was not enough in my opinion.
No, I think you're right. Cause I think 30 is what I colloquially was told, coming up in the industry. And yeah. I always felt like it wasn't quite enough.
Yep.
Maybe 40 is right. Something like that.
No, I'd keep going higher personally, but we'll see.
Oh, okay.
whatever you do, do it the same every time.
Yes.
All right. So that takes care of degassing. You also have a few tips on beer 4. Talk about that.
So measuring alcohol of beer, there's a bunch of different ways. And one of the, I think, most common ways right now that's most affordable is alcohol with distillation. So you're distilling out the alcohol from your beer sample and measuring a gravity, probably with an EasyDens or a hydrometer, measuring your alcohol content that way. And I do find that with distillations, whether this is for alcohol or even down the line VDKs, if you're going to run a VDK distillation, I find that making sure you're using a water pump, it's a small thing. It's, I think, literally only $12 on Amazon. It allows you to recirculate cold water through that distillation setup so that you're not just dumping water down the drain trying to keep this reaction cold. You know, it's a small thing and it's not a ton of water that you're saving, but it is enough if you were in Flint, Michigan, for instance. Along the same lines with alcohol distillation and VDK distillation, if you're using an open flame to distill or to boil your samples, I do really recommend investing in a heating mantle, which is sort of just a little warming basket, shall we say, a scientific warming basket that is a much safer way than an open flame for boiling up your sample. And I think luckily the open flame distillations is not something that's as popular as it used to be. So hopefully there's only a few people still doing that. And then lastly, I just say whenever you're, you know, hot glass looks exactly the same as cold glass. And I think it's really important that you have a way to have heat protection for your hands that has articulation. So I like the Of Glove. It works it for the temperatures that you're going to be seeing. That articulation is really important. I can't tell you how many times I've seen lab techs just like pull their sweatshirt sleeve down over their hand to sort of, you know, remove a ket clip or take the round bottom flask out of the mantle. Just spend the $9. And get yourself some good safety gloves. We can even just bypass all of that and not have to deal with any sort of distillation at all. If you test your alcohol via NIR, which is near infrared. So replacing your distillation method with a gravimetric method is definitely superior in terms of an environmentally friendly option. And those Easy Dens that connect to your phone from Anton Parr, they are available on Amazon at this point for, I think, $350, something along that. So it is worth your time, and it will save a whole lot of headache. You can run that reaction at room temperature, right? You don't need to boil a liquid. You don't need to use that heated pressure to create a distillation. You don't need to run any water. It removes boiling liquids. It removes boiling glass. And it removes that water waste. So I do really recommend investing in a gravimetric method for alcohol.
All right. A little money solves all problems, right?
It is unfortunate, but yes. Yeah.
All right. How about beer 8? That's another one that plenty of brewers are doing.
Beer 8 is titratable acidity. So if you're looking at beer 8A, that's using titratable acidity by pH meter. It's really, really common for people to want to use beer 8B, which is titratable acidity by phenolphthalein indicator, which is really cool reaction because you take your beer and you drop the base into the beer, and it starts to turn pink as you get more and more basic, closer to 7, pH of 7. It's age-old general chemistry technique that's really satisfying, but unfortunately, phenolphthalein is a carcinogen. So I recommend, if you are already testing your knockout worts, your fermentation pHs with a pH meter, you don't even need to purchase phenolphthalein for that. So go ahead and just skip the indicator one for titratable acidity, and you can measure it with the pH meter that you have for pHs. You don't have to boil the sample, which is something that's recommended if you're doing it with an indicator. It removes that hot liquid in glass, and it also removes a little bit of water waste.
Coming up,
I highly recommend everybody listening ditches their pressure cooker and autoclave and use a microwave for preparing your sterilized media.
I'm John Bryce, and you're listening to the Master Brewers Podcast from the Master Brewers Association of the Americas. There's really only one thing that keeps this podcast going, and that's when listeners like you take the time to thank our sponsors. The next time you talk to a rep from one of these companies, be sure to thank them for their generous support.
Way back in 1875, Alexander Dingemans started producing malt from the barley grown on his own farm. The upstart Belgian maltster went on to supply many breweries and neighboring villages, founding a homegrown business that remains 100% independent and family-owned five generations later. Still located in Europe's most prized barley growing region, today Dingemans combines modern techniques with a long-standing focus on quality and service. Learn more at bsgcraftbrewing.com.
Get to know Proximity Malt. We malt superior, European-style, low-protein varieties grown close to home in Delaware and Colorado. Domestically grown, precisely malted to style. With our team of seasoned experts and two brand new malt houses, try what's really new in malt. Check us out at www.proximitymalt.com.
Are you sure you're getting the best deal? Visit the Lupulin Exchange, where you can find every hop variety, every brand, and every vendor. Compare prices, reviews, shipping speeds, reliability, and more on over 1 million pounds shipping direct from every hop merchant and grower in the U.S. The Lupulin Exchange. One stop, all the hops. And here's what's coming up on the Master Brewers calendar. District St. Paul, Minneapolis meets May 9th at Shell's Brewing in New Ulm. District Northwest meets in beautiful Hood River May 10th and 11th. District Midwest meets May 23rd at High Grain Brewing in Cincinnati. District St. Louis has moved their spring quarterly meeting to May 30th at Urban Chestnut. The Master Brewers Brewery Maintenance Systems course begins June 6th. District Midwest meets June 13th at Pneumatic Scale Angeles in Stowe, Ohio. District Philly's annual golf outing is June 21st at Mountain Valley Golf Course in Barnesville. District Michigan's summer social is July 13th at Fitzgerald Park in Grand Ledge. It's time to save the date for the 2024 World Brewing Congress. That's August 17th through the 20th in Minneapolis. And this year, the Master Brewers Brewing and Malting Science course runs September 5th through November 8th. Check out the full calendar of events at mbaa.com for more details or to find a district meeting near you. Now back to the show. Beer 14 is for percent ash, which I don't think I've ever done, so maybe you better explain what that one's all about.
I think percent ash, yeah, this is a pretty niche amount of breweries out there probably testing their ash determination. It is when you take a very small sample of beer and you put it in a what's called a muffle furnace that gets extremely hot in a very short amount of time. And it essentially ignites everything and turns it in, turns all the beer into ash. It dries out into a powder. We then weigh that ash, and that's the percent of whatever volume you put in there. Muffle furnaces are not only expensive, but they are a huge energy sink. And they, even with the most rigorous safety options, they still pose a threat to your techs. They get really hot on the outside. So what I found is looking through the ASBC and all of their calculated metrics that you can go through, you know, there are ways if you have gravity and extract, you can calculate calories. There are ways that you can calculate alcohol, etc. And so using all of the equations that we have for beer, I calculated our percent ash. And so I have that calculation on the MBAA slides that I have for this presentation, which allows you to remove the muffle furnace and just calculate your percent ash. And I think that because it's such a niche metric, I think we're going to be okay with the precision that comes from those calculations and estimates.
All right, fair enough. All right, let's talk about IBUs, because that's one that ought to be familiar to pretty much everybody listening.
Yeah, I think IBUs has one of the largest potentials for implementing green chemistry. I don't think every single brewery running it right now could implement every single one of these, but every brewery tomorrow could take at least one of these points and change something about their IBU process. So the main one for me, which always shocks me, is the original ASBC method calls for 50 mils of beer, or no, I'm sorry, 25 mils of beer and 50 mils of isooctane, which is an absurd amount of isooctane. So not too long ago, I did a deep dive into MBAA, and there was a poster in 2008 at one of the conferences that said there is another way to do this. We've validated results for what's called the reduced solvent method, which I think is now officially on the ASBC method, where you use 5 milliliters of beer and only 10 mils of isooctane, which is a huge reduction in your waste stream there. But what I have been using for the last 10 years, and I'm TTB certified for IBUs on this, is what I call the reduced solvent method, where I actually only use 2.5 milliliters of beer and 5 mils of isooctane alongside with that 0.25 mils of 3N hydrochloric acid. And it is such a huge reduction, right? We're going from 50 mils in the original to 5 mils of isooctane. It does not leave you a ton of room for your measurement, because that 5 mil of ISO, once the humulones have moved over into that phase, that is all that's going to fit into your glass cuvette. So you only get one go at it. But I think for the lab tech that has these IBUs on routine, it's generally not a problem. So really, if you can reduce that, and not only are you reducing how much money you're pumping into spending on iso-octane, you're reducing the amount of money you're spending to safely discard the hazardous waste afterwards. So there's a few safety things that we can also, a few things around IBUs that we can do to improve our safety. I really recommend using chemical pumps for the iso-octane and the hydrochloric acid. Those are just the bottle top pumps that you can get. They're a little bit expensive, but if you don't have the ventilation that you'd like to have for dealing with this kind of chemical, I highly recommend the chemical pumps. And it just makes each dispense of the chemical that much more standardized, whereas, you know, with pipettes, you can occasionally run into some issues. I also highly recommend just buying the three normalized hydrochloric acid instead of buying a stronger concentration and diluting down, because I think that that is just one of the worst days in the lab for me. Is it took me way too long to figure that out as an option. So just, you know, buy the concentration that you want to use, buy it directly. And then if you were out there crazily, we'll say raw dye being the iso-octane, please wear a mask if you don't have a pump or a hood. Do something to protect yourself, because iso-octane is dangerous to inhale. So the methods call for octanol and antifoam B, which are both chemicals that you can use to reduce foam and foaming or any sort of carbonic explosion, so any sort of release of CO2. And I think that I have never once needed these chemicals. I have never purchased them. I think that they're a waste of money. And I think that if you have properly degassed your samples, then it doesn't come in handy, and it just creates more waste and more waste of money as well. There are a few labs out there, and I'm still trying to implement these as well, is using glass past your pipettes for the solvent transfer when you're pulling from your centrifuge tube and putting into the cuvette. Using those past your pipettes are excellent. Glass is better than plastic always. Same with the glass centrifuge tubes. So switching from Falcon tubes or plastic centrifuge tubes to reusable glass centrifuge tubes. And I know Zymology Labs has implemented that entirely. I'm still working on it. Glass centrifuge tubes do come with their own concern of safety, because breaking of glass is a concern. And then lastly, if you have the room, the space in your lab, and you have the time, you can actually regenerate your iso-octane. So one of the things I do want to say, because it is not clear at all on the ASBC method, but ISO cannot go down the drain, and the acidified beer afterwards also cannot go down the drain. There are a few resources in the MBAA that say go ahead and dump the rest of that beer waste down the drain. However, you have acidified that with 3 normal hydrochloric acid. The pH of that beer is now below 1. It cannot go down the drain, and I cannot stress this enough. It's one thing that the ASBC is actively going through and changing in all of their literature, but it does need to be collected for proper hazardous disposal. So even if you're saving that iso-octane and regenerating it with a chromatography column, that acidified beer does need to be paid for hazardous disposal. And John, I finally did it. I got us to the end of IBU green chemistry.
All right. Well, let's shift gears and take a look at micro.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, in the same vein as IBUs, there's a few things that we can change. You know, I really like, I've switched to using glass Petri dishes that are borosilicate glass that are excellent for reuse. I go through a ton of plates for microplating, and I think that other labs as well go through quite a few. So if you purchase a large quantity of these, you can cycle through them, sterilize them, and reuse them. They're really excellent and highly recommended. They do require an upfront cost, but you will quickly make up for that in the amount of plates, plastic plates, you're not buying over and over. We already sort of went over composting, but there are a few other chemicals that I'd like to talk about, including for when you're doing differential stains. What's really cool is when you're isolating beer microbes, you can identify them with a Gram stain. You can figure out, is this Pediococcus? Is this Acetobacter? And one of the chemicals that you use is iodine. And what's really cool is you can just flush the plate with iodine, rinse the iodine. That is something that can go down the drain. But what's really cool is you can put iodine in a container that's as tall as the slide and just dunk the slide in and pull it out. Because the bacteria has been adhered to the slide, it won't come off when you pull that iodine out, and it allows you to reuse that iodine over and over again. Now, I will say, do not flush your crystal violet down the sink. The ASBC methods also say that that's okay. It's not crystal violet is actually incredibly, incredibly dangerous for humans and for animals. So, differential stains, there's some cool chemistry going on there. And then lastly, the big thing that I've been pushing over the last few years is media preparation. I highly recommend everybody listening ditches their pressure cooker and autoclave and use a microwave for preparing your sterilized media. And I have a whole insane talk on this and deep dive into the chemical history of using microwaves for sterilization. It's just something, a piece of technology somehow that hadn't made it quite to the beer industry. And so I have a video on YouTube about microwaving micromedia for plating up bacteria and yeast that shows you some steps on how to do it and also talks you through the science behind it. And what that does is, you know, it increases your energy efficiency because pressure cookers and autoclaves run for hours and at extremely high temps and pressures. A microwave, I can go from powdered media to solid poured plates ready for inoculation in 30 minutes. And I know that you cannot achieve that with pressure cookers and autoclaves. So not only are we using a microwave for only 5 to 10 minutes instead of the many hours a pressure cooker and autoclave takes, we're going to be done with our micro in less time as well. It prevents accidents. Autoclaves are relatively safe because of safety features they have built in, but pressure cookers notoriously are dangerous and could even in the past get you on some no-fly lists if you purchase it. And it just prevents a ton of extra waste and cleanup. I think the microwave is a really excellent way to jumpstart your microbe program.
That's cool. I haven't seen your video, but I've always wondered why pressure cookers were still so common and why microwaves weren't used very often. So we'll definitely put a link in the show notes to that video so people can check that out. Okay, you've got a lot of ideas here. Hopefully people have some takeaways from that. But for listeners that want to start making changes in their labs, what's the best way to get started?
That's a great question. Earlier, at the very beginning of the presentation, I said that green chemistry is something that you can adapt and change to fit your budget and tailor it to your needs. And that is absolutely the same all the way through this talk. So you can improve your waste prevention and your atom economy by going through and mapping your waste streams. So going through the life cycle of a sample or of a beer and saying, hey, this thing we just put into the process, where does it end up? Let's map that waste stream and let's address those glaring problems. And if you sort them, you can pinpoint ways to reduce. So mapping your inputs and your outputs can help you with waste prevention and atom economy. For choosing safer solvents, I highly recommend downloading your SDS sheets for all the current chemicals that you have in the brewery, in the pub, in the lab, and then research alternatives. This will take a little bit of time, and you may need to get in contact with your chemical distributor and ask them what they recommend. But it will take a little bit of research, but that's one way you can choose some safer solvents. For energy efficiency, I highly recommend examining methods that use high heat or high pressure and find ways to reduce. And in fact, that is how I don't want to say discovered microwaving micromedia, because plenty of people did it before me. But that's how I came to that realization was, you know, a pressure cooker uses so much energy and gets, you know, pressurized, it becomes a potential bomb, right? So how can I reduce that? How can I get to those extreme temperatures without causing danger to myself? And that's sort of how I came to the microwave. So looking at your methods or your instruments that do use high heat, high pressure, and finding ways to reduce. For renewable feedstocks, again, identifying energy outputs and reviewing your alternatives. So looking at which natural gas is best for you. Do you want propane or do you want coal? Do you want ethanol? Do you want solar? Looking at how you are receiving the energy that you're using. And then lastly, for accident prevention, I highly recommend isolating areas of potential danger and implementing, not just implementing, but using appropriate PPE and always keeping a mind to safety first.
All right. Sounds good. So like I said, we'll put some links in the show notes. Do you want to give listeners an overview of any other resources that might be worth checking out after they listen to this?
So I highly recommend to every single beer chemist or every brewer or person in the cellar, get your brewery to join the American Society for Brewing Chemists. That's the ASBC. John definitely has a link for you for asbcnet.org. They are completely worth your time and money. I really recommend also checking out the American Chemical Society Green Chemistry Institute. That's where you can find more information about green chemistry in a broader sweep than just beer. You can also find a link to MBAA isooctane regeneration, so how you can reclaim that ISO so you're not having to purchase it or pay for disposal of the used isooctane. Along those lines, you can find a hazardous waste disposal nearby for your area. For me, I generally get rid of my isooctane in 4-liter chunks, and that cost me about $28. So it's not a very expensive process. And then there will be a link to microwaving micromedia, my YouTube video.
That was Dana Garvis here on the Master Brewers Podcast. As always, check the show notes for links. My fist full of courage. Are you enjoying the Master Brewers Podcast? Let me tell you about a simple way you can help us keep making more. Take a minute to thank our sponsors. There's no way we could produce this show without generous support from sponsors like Hopsteiner, Proximity Malt, BSG, Berkeley Yeast, and the Lupulin Exchange. So please, let them know you heard their message on the Master Brewers Podcast and that you appreciate their support.